this. Maybe it's his way of making sure he gets to fight Tedros himself. Maybe, said Nicola. But it seems strange, somehow. Artificial, even. Like he's setting something up. Sophie peered at her, mind churning. Professor Dovey suddenly swept into the dining room, her hair a mess, her face tired and gaunt, and a bag on her arm. I came as soon as I could, she said to Tedros. I did what you asked. I cast a barrier over the outer gate so the skims can't fly in. It's a spell the schoolmaster showed Lesso and me, to seal the school in a crisis. If Rafal's sealing of the sheriff's sack worked on the snake, then the barrier is guaranteed to work, too. She coughed, clutching at her throat. Sorry. I'm feeling a bit... Professor Dovey, you shouldn't be here, Nicola said, running up to her. Merlin sent you a note telling you not to come. And Tedros sent me a note saying he needed me, Good's Dean countered, turning to the king. What else can I do to help? Her knees buckled, her body starting to slump. Instantly Tedros seized her waist and propped her up. Sophie and Agatha sprinted to help him. I'm okay. I just need to sit down, Professor Dovey stammered. I'll take her into my room, said Agatha, grabbing her from Tedros. I'll come with you, said Sophie, taking one of Dovey's arms.
I'll come too,
Tedros started. No, Agatha said to him. Get the others in position. Sophie noticed her friend's voice was unusually harsh, but Agatha's focus stayed on Good's Dean, helping her towards the Queen's chamber at the end of the hall. As soon as Professor Dovey was safely inside, Agatha closed the door. Tedros should never have sent for you, she said, laying the Dean on the bed. And you should have stayed at school like Merlin told you to, Professor.
When Camelot's king calls for me, I will always be there.
Professor Dovey rasped, hacking another cough.
It's this crystal ball. I've told Merlin I can't handle it alone.
She pointed at her bag, half open. Through the flap, Sophie could see the top of the glowing orb.
I brought it here in case something happens to me.
Nothing will happen to you, said Sophie, feeling the Dean's forehead. You just have a slight fever, that's all. But no more using this ball until you're better, Agatha said, taking the Dean's bag and slinging it onto her arm. In the hallway, the clock struck a quarter hour. 11:45. 15 minutes left. And until you're better, you're to stay here and rest, said Sophie. Don't move from this room.
That's an order, Professor, said Agatha.
But Professor Dovey was already snuffling softly, fast asleep. Sophie blew out the lamp and closed the door. The two girls slipped onto the Blue Tower balcony, only a short distance from Excalibur, still protected by the glass lockbox, while the fleet of guards usually manning it had been dispatched to the perimeter with the army.
I'm worried about Dovey, said Agatha, tucking the Dean's bag in a corner of the balcony.
You heard her. It's that crystal ball. Whatever she's been doing with it clearly drains her, said Sophie. Just keep it away from her and she'll get better. Tedros knew she was ill. He could see it when she appeared on the ship. Why would he make her come all the way here in the dead of night? Why would he risk Professor Dovey's life? Agatha harped,
and then that rambling speech in the hall, and going to see Lady Gremlane instead of taking Lance into Sherwood Forest, where Lance would have been safe, and everything that happened at the coronation. Agatha shook her head, a sad look clouding her face. Maybe you're right about him. Sophie stared at her. Right about what? Don't make me say it. I know full well you doubt him as a king, said Agatha. I believe in Tedros, I really do. I defend him as much as I can. His quest for glory was to be a true king to Camelot, and I want him to succeed. But sometimes... sometimes he just doesn't think like a king, or act like one. And the fact I'm saying this when my quest was to be his queen... well, maybe I'm failing my quest, too. Her focus moved back to Sophie, who'd gone stiff as a board. For a moment, she thought her friend was shocked at her confession, but then she noticed Sophie's eyes. They weren't looking at her, they were looking past her. Slowly, Agatha turned.
It's 5 minutes until midnight, said Tedros, shadowed under the balcony. Sophie, you should be with Rian.
Of course, Sophie said, giving Agatha a nervous glance before hurrying away. But Sophie didn't go to Rian like she was supposed to. She hid behind the balcony wall and peeked around the edge. Agatha and Tedros stood together in silence, Excalibur hovering above their heads. In the distance, they could see Dovey's magical barrier glinting green in the moonlight over the outer gates. Behind the gates, Camelot's army walled off the drawbridge while the three witches patrolled the temporary rope bridge. Beneath Agatha and Tedros, Rian waited in the courtyard, right in front of the castle doors. I'm sorry, Tedros, said Agatha, holding back tears. I just was worried about Dovey and I got frustrated. I shouldn't have said...
You're right, said the king.
Agatha looked at him. Tedros met her eyes clearly.
It's why you tried to take over my quest. It's why you're always jumping in to help me. Let's face it, Agatha. You don't think I'm a good king, and the truth is... you're right. Everything you said about me is right.
Agatha reached out, searching for words. Tedros, I... Shouts rose from the outer gates. Agatha and Tedros turned sharply, so did Sophie. There was movement on the rope bridge, shadows barreling towards the three witches in charge of defending it. Then suddenly Anadil, Hester, and Dot were fleeing back across it, onto the castle grounds, along with a crush of soldiers jamming onto the rope bridge, which swayed and teetered under their weight. Tedros's eyes flared. He sprinted past Sophie, calling for Rian, Agatha chasing behind him. Sophie ran out onto the balcony and watched the rope bridge snap between the gates and the courtyard, sending dozens of soldiers plunging into the savage sea below. Booms echoed nearby from the broken drawbridge, sealed between the gates. Crack! 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 The drawbridge smashed open, battered down by desperate soldiers who stampeded across its splintered planks towards the castle. Sophie could see Rena, Beatrix, Hort, Guinevere, and panicked leaders of allied kingdoms bolting into the courtyard along with the rest of Tedros's army. Sophie gasped, because now she could see what everyone was running from. Skims were stabbing the army from behind, razor sharp at both ends, impaling bodies, and then whipping around and spearing them through the front like killing machines. They moved so quickly and brutally, each one with a life of its own, that the soldiers didn't stand a chance. They fled in droves as Skims slashed through Camelot's defence, before the eels started veering sharply towards the castle. Shell-shocked, Sophie looked up at Dovey's shield over the outer gates. Completely intact. In a flash, Sophie was scrambling down the stairs as soldiers' screams tore through the courtyard along with the Skims' searing shrieks. "It's impossible," she thought. "The barrier over the gates, he couldn't get through. He was supposed to need an army." Which left only one explanation. He didn't need an army. Because he didn't need to get through the gates. Sophie's heart thundered. The snake had been inside all along. Chapter 28. Agatha. The Princess and the King. Tedros met her eyes.
"And the truth is, you're right,"
he'd said.
"Everything you said about me is right."
Agatha struggled under his gaze, searching for words. But a warning pounded in her head. "I've already told you how this story will end, with your fairy tale shattered, with everything you thought true turned untrue." 6 months ago, she and Tedros thought their story had ended. They'd been off to Camelot Castle, destined to restore it to glory as queen and king. Good had won, evil vanquished, with the success of their quests a foregone conclusion. But now they were atop that castle, admitting they hadn't won after all. That their quests to be that glorious king and queen had failed. No matter how much they loved each other, the end wasn't the end at all. But the beginning of something thornier, twistier, where every truth about her and Tedros' love story suddenly seemed untrue. Just like the snake had promised. Was this the final crack in her and Tedros' fairy tale? A fairy tale that would shatter forever? Were the snake's lies really the truth? Agatha looked at her prince. "Tedros, I... Shouts exploded near the outer gates. It happened so fast. Drawbridge smashing down, the witches fleeing across the bridge, the Skims stabbing soldiers from behind before the eels turned and flew towards the castle. "Rian!" Tedros yelled as he dashed from the balcony down the stairwell to find his knight, while Agatha chased him, her heart slamming. "Dovey's barrier, it's still intact," she called out. "He was inside the gates all along." "Rian!" Tedros yelled again, leaping downstairs as he drew Lance's sword from his belt. How did the snake get in? Agatha thought, trying to keep up with her prince. But there was no time to think. She and Tedros dashed out of the archway and into the courtyard, only to see a slew of Skims shoot for their heads. Someone tackled Tedros and Agatha to the ground, making the Skims miss, before the eels circled around and savagely killed a dwarf right in front of them. Agatha lifted her head from the dirt as Rian grabbed her and Tedros and pulled them both into an archway behind a stone pillar, where Sophie was already hiding. Across from them, Hester, Anadil and Dot crouched behind a second column, with Beatrix, Rena, Nicola and Hort's Manwolf behind a third. Rena had a gash in her thigh, her shield dented. Hort let out a growl of pain as he ripped a spasming skin out of his calf muscle and crushed it in his hairy palm. Agatha peeked out from the pillar to see the once quiet field in front of the castle turned into a death zone, with soldiers trampling each other across muddy grass, desperately seeking cover in the dark, while Skim stabbed them left and right. A son of the lion took a Skim to the arm a few yards in front of Agatha before one of his friends yanked him behind a bush. "They're going to find us. All of us," Beatrix said, watching Skims easily take down a giant before they went off to search for fresh prey.
"We have to kill as many as we can," Rian urged. "The Skims are his armor. We can strip it away, kill enough of them, and he's nothing but flesh and blood."
"We need fire. It's the only way to kill them," said Agatha. "Where will we get enough fire to kill that many Skims?" Sophie retorted. Tedros jolted straight.
"From oil," he spun to Rian. "Cover me."
Rian took Rina's shield and blocked Tedros as the two boys moved towards the courtyard. As soon as Tedros was out from under the archway, he tilted his head upwards and whistled between two fingers. Bogdan and Willem peeped over the edge of a blue tower balcony, their bodies hidden behind a fortress of barrels.
"Use the oil!"
Tedros called as Rian smashed Skims away.
"How?" said Bogdan.
"How?" Tedros barked. "No one told us," said Willem.
Tedros seethed.
"It's oil! Just take it and..."
Rian snatched Tedros by the arm and flung him back behind the pillar.
"Why'd you do that?"
Tedros berated, starting to get up again. He froze still. Four Skims peeked around the side of the pillar at him. Agatha, Sophie, and Rian. Their sharp, eyeless tips squiggled with glee before they looked past the King's group and saw Hester's and Hort's teams across the archway. The Skims murmured high-pitched gurgles, taking in the bounty of flesh. They hewed together like a single arrow, drifting between targets as if they couldn't decide who to kill first. Then they flew at Tedros.
"Tedros, move!"
Agatha gasped, shoving him left just as Rian shoved him right, trapping Tedros straight in the Skim's path. A gush of amber liquid suddenly slopped down from above, drenching the eels and splashing to the ground. The Skims looked up, startled. So did Tedros. Bogdan and Willem gaped down between pillars.
"Bogdan thought we were supposed to pour it," said Willem.
Tedros groaned, but now the oil-soaked Skims had turned back to the King, their lethal tips glowing green. They slashed towards him. Tedros lunged forward with his gold finger glow just as the Skims hit his chest, and with a lion's roar, he swiped his fingertip across them, setting the eels aflame. Instantly, the Skims detonated into a fireball, shrieking and sizzling before they crumbled into dirt. Anadil's three rats set upon them, scarfing them up like they were crisped bacon. The entire group slumped with relief. Rian squeezed Tedros's shoulder.
"Good thinking, Your Highness."
Tedros glanced at Agatha.
"Occasionally I can think like a king."
Agatha flinched. "Tedros, sorry to interrupt your drama, but we're still about to die," Sophie said as more Skims shot through a 7-foot nymph in front of them. Somewhere Kiko screamed. "Tedros might have killed a few Skims, but how do we kill the rest?"
"Brains," said Hester, eyeing Anadil.
"Talent," said Anadil, eyeing Hester.
The witches turned to Sophie.
"Neither of which you have," said Anadil.
She snapped her fingers and her three black rats hopped onto her shoulders.
Rats?
Sophie sniped as Anadil whispered to her pets.
That's what's supposed to save us.
Anadil's red eyes sliced through her.
Watch!
The rats jumped off her shoulders and cannonballed into the puddle of oil like pigs into mud, slathering every inch of their fur, gulping up mouthfuls of it and hissing gleefully. Then they took off, scrambling up soldiers' bodies and onto their heads. They whipped their rat tails and sprayed oil onto any skims within reach before leaping to the next soldier's head like a landing pad, dousing eels as they flew. Like stealth trapeze artists, they swung across the battlefield, twirling and tumbling and shaking out their fur to make sure every skim got a flick of oil, careful not to wet the soldiers. Agatha's eyes tried to keep up with them in the night sky, ping-ponging in and out of torchlight like kamikaze fairies. Locked in battle with Camelot's army, the skims didn't notice three tiny furballs silently crisscrossing the air above as they executed spiral death drops and aerial dives, squeezing every last drop of oil from their bodies onto eels and spraying them with whatever they'd gargled in their mouths, until at last their work was done and they collapsed exhausted and reeking in their master's lap. Agatha and the rest of the group blinked at the rats.
Now what?
Sophie said, unimpressed. Hester glared.
Now it's my turn.
With a searing cry, the demon on Hester's neck flew off her skin, grazing Sophie's cheek as he whizzed toward the battlefield, inflating to red-skinned, full-blooded life. Conjuring glowing fire bolts from his mouth, he hurled them at unsuspecting skims, igniting the oil and combusting the eels to ashes. Soldiers ducked in shock as flame bombs exploded all around them like a fireworks show, skims' screams multiplying until they were all Agatha could hear. Rian and Tedros looked at each other, then whirled to the group.
"Let's go," said Tedros.
The crew charged into battle behind the king and knight who hacked at flaming skims with their swords. Bleeding and struggling with a limp, Hort's man-wolf snatched skims out of the air and let out savage roars as he tore the eels apart. Sophie slit blazing skims open with a dagger she'd swiped off the ground. Beatrix and Rena shot them through with bows and arrows. Hester and Anadil ran to help Kiko, tormented by a burning skim that had yet to die, while Nicola wielded Rena's dented shield like a frying pan at her father's pub and smashed skims to pieces. But Agatha still hadn't moved from the archway. She'd never fought without magic, nor used a sword before. She didn't have Tedros' strength or Rian's skills, or Sophie's evil. But neither did Nicola, or Hort, or Dot. They had something else to fight with, she realized, her heart thumping like a war drum. The same thing that had fueled her in every war against evil. Her friends. She grabbed a pickaxe from a fallen dwarf and stormed into the fight, chopping skims out of the air and spinning round to bludgeon more. Burning skims came from every direction like falling comets, streaking at Good's future queen. Over and over she took them down with vicious yells, spraying the air with fire dust, until Agatha was bent over and heaving, with no more skims to kill. Slowly she rose, her axe over her shoulder, her face smeared with ooze, her hair matted to her head. The rest of the group gathered at her side, looking out at a field awash in bodies and mist. Wounded soldiers stirred, others looked out from their hiding places, stunned to still be alive. Agatha turned to Tedros, who stood by Rian's side, their arms on each other's shoulders, gazing blearily into the distance. Then, the king and knight went rigid. Agatha followed their eyes. Out of the smoke and embers came the snake. His suit of skims shredded from top to bottom, revealing the young, mortal flesh of his pale chest and legs. Blood and bruises covered his milk-white skin. His body weakened by the death of his armor. But the snake lived, moving towards them with clear purpose, his emerald eyes honed in on Tedros through his green mask, still intact. He stopped 10 feet from the king. Excalibur shimmered in its lockbox above their heads.
"Hello, brother," said the snake.
"I'm not your brother," Tedros spat, lit up with rage. "I'm the lion who kills the snake. I'm the king who will bring your head to my people. I'm the real king."
"Are you?" said the snake,
his stare hard and cold.
"Time will tell."
Tedros stepped forward.
"You're out of time."
The king stripped off his armor, revealing his bare, golden chest. He threw Lancelot's sword aside.
"No magic, no weapons," he said. "We end this tonight."
"Tedros, no," Agatha said, seizing his arm. He pushed her away, glowering at the snake.
"You and me."
The snake stepped forward, torchlight casting shadows on his rippled torso.
"You and me," said the snake.
"Witches, mark it,"
Tedros ordered. Anadil's rats sprinted around the two boys, dripping oil. Hester's demon set the ring aflame.
"He doesn't fight fair," Agatha insisted to Tedros.
Tedros didn't listen.
"On your signal,"
he said to the snake.
"Younger brother first," the snake cooed.
Tedros gnashed his teeth.
"Now!"
They launched at each other like gorillas, chests slamming, before Tedros gripped the snake by the neck and bashed him face first to the ground inside the ring of fire. The king punched him in the head, Tedros's fist crunching loudly against the snake's green scales, connecting with the flesh beneath it. The snake struggled onto his side, then stabbed out his leg, hitting Tedros's sternum and knocking him backwards, dangerously close to the flaming ring. Agatha clasped Rian's arm.
"You have to help him!"
Rian didn't move.
"I made a promise," he said. "This is his fight."
The snake lunged forward and clobbered the king, clawing at Tedros's face, opening up bloody scratches. Tedros swung his arm around his opponent's throat, driving him into the ground, before the snake thrust his hips and kneed Tedros in the gut, taking the king down. Agatha watched in horror as Tedros weathered blows from the deadly villain, while her friends looked on anxiously from outside the ring. Together, they could destroy the snake. They outnumbered him 10-1. It didn't matter what Tedros wanted, not when he might die. She lurched towards the ring, about to bound over the low flames. Rian snagged her back.
"His fight,"
he said. The two were on top of each other now, wrestling for dominance. Tedros hammering at the snake's chest as the snake lay flat on him, squeezing the king's throat. The snake strangled Tedros harder, and the king started to choke, his punches weakening. The snake took advantage, slamming Tedros in the face with his fist, swelling the king's eye, and opening up a spigot of blood. Tedros writhed, struggling to free himself from the snake's death grip. "No!" Agatha cried, trying to break from Rian's grasp. The king turned blue, wheezing for his last breaths. Tedros shoved his palm onto the snake's face, and with a stifled cry, he muscled the green mask backwards, the king grunting desperately, about to pass out, until at last Tedros managed just enough space between their bodies. He jammed his boot against the snake's ribs and crushed him as hard as he could. The snake toppled backwards and fell close to the flames. In a flash, Tedros was on him, gasping for breath, punching the snake again and again. "That's for Chaddock," he said, belting him. "That's for Lancelot," he said, walloping him harder. "That's for Lady Gremlane. That's for the Lady of the Lake." Blood seeped through the scales of the snake's mask, his body listless. "That's for me," said Tedros, delivering the hardest punch of all. He stopped to take a breath. The snake kicked him in the chest, sending Tedros flying out of the ring, his bare back grazing the flames and searing red. Tedros landed in dirt, bloodied, bruised, and burned. Agatha rushed to his side. "Tedros!" He was still breathing. Slowly, he lifted his muddy head and looked past his princess to the snake in the ring. The green-masked villain hadn't moved, still flat on his back, surrounded in a pool of blood. Agatha remembered Chaddock, posed the same way in a painting, the first page of a fairy tale that was now about to end.
"Come and kill me, little boy," the snake rasped. "Come and kill your brother."
Tedros staggered up, but his legs buckled and he fell back. He tried again. Agatha stopped him.
"Let me go, Agatha,"
he panted, blood streaming.
"He'll kill you," said his princess.
Tedros struggled against her, but she held him down.
"This is my quest," he snarled. "Let me finish it."
"Stay down. You're losing too much blood," Agatha said. She saw the snake's body shift, starting to rise once more. Agatha locked eyes with Tedros's knight. "Rian," she said firmly. The knight didn't move.
"I have to kill him,"
said Tedros, pushing against his princess. Agatha held him down, her gaze on the knight. Still, Rian didn't budge.
"This isn't a choice, Rian. I'm ordering you,"
said Agatha sharply.
"I'm ordering you as your queen."
This time, Rian blinked.
"As you wish, milady,"
the knight said. Tedros glanced between them, suddenly understanding.
"No, I'm the king. He's mine,"
Tedros fought. But Rian was already walking into the ring. The copper-haired boy slammed the snake back down to the ground and put his foot on the snake's pallid chest.
"By order of the queen, I sentence you to die,"
said Rian. The snake quivered under his boot. Rian bent over, took the snake's head in both hands, and wrenched it hard, snapping his neck. The snake jerked one final time, then went still. Fires cooled around the ring. Smoke blew across the snake's dead body. Tedros slumped limply in Agatha's arms. Dazed soldiers converged on the courtyard, littered with wounded bodies and skims. The allied leaders emerged from the gatehouse, along with Guinevere, to see the king and knight still alive, and the snake dead. The depleted army unleashed a cry of victory. Over their heads, Willem and Bogdan rang the bell in the Blue Tower, which echoed down to the city, where bells tolled in response and a cheer resounded, signalling that the people of Camelot knew the snake had been killed. Here in the field, the cheers fell away as everyone realized Tedros was still on the ground. Together, they circled the wounded king. Rian kneeled beside Agatha, helping her hold Tedros's body. But the king's eyes stayed on his princess.
"He was mine. He was mine."
Tedros breathed again and again. Agatha touched his face. "You're still alive, Tedros. That's what matters. It could have been a trick." She held him closer. "I was protecting you." Tedros resisted.
"But you didn't protect me. You held me back. You always hold me back,"
he said, looking right at her.
"You don't have faith in me, Agatha. You stop me from being a king. Don't you see?"
He blinked through blood and tears.
"The only trick is you."
The words hit Agatha like a stone. Her hands let go of him, ceding his body to the knight. That is where the princess and the king ended. Because the people of Camelot were already flooding through the gates, expecting a celebration. By sunrise, the royal grounds were filled with evers and nevers from all over the woods, eager to see the dead snake and the lion who killed him. Still filthy and covered in blood and ooze, Agatha crouched behind a pillar near the balcony to eavesdrop on the people beneath.
"So-called king ain't so-called anymore, ain't he?" said a man proudly. "Beat the snake with his bare fists."
"Lion killed him, though," said his friend.
"King already beat him to nothing."
"Lion finished him. All that matters."
Agatha stopped listening. She rose to her feet and looked back into the castle sitting room across the hall, where Sophie and Rian were treating Tedros's wounds.
"This is going to hurt,"
said Rian, standing over Tedros, who was shirtless and face down on the couch, his back red hot from the burns. Tedros bit into a pillow, and his knight spread salve on his skin while Sophie held the king down. Tedros let out a stifled roar, his teeth tearing the pillow to feathers before his yells muted to groans, and he let his two friends wrap him with gauze. Agatha watched Sophie and Rian take care of Tedros, the way she should be. Something must be wrong when good's greatest helper isn't helping, said a voice. She turned to see Guinevere next to her, dressed all in white, watching her son with Sophie and Rian. "I think I've helped Tedros enough for now," Agatha said softly. You did what you had to do, Agatha. You kept my son alive.
And yet, he hates me for it, said Agatha, tears flowing.
Because the snake was his to kill, said Guinevere, not for his own pride, but for his people. Tedros needed to be the king no matter the cost, even to the end if need be. You took that from him.
But I didn't want him to end up like Lancelot, Agatha argued, smearing at her eyes. I didn't want him to die. Surely you understand that?
More than you can ever imagine, said Guinevere starkly. I didn't want Lancelot to die, Agatha. Of course I didn't. And yet I asked him to go into the woods with Tedros, knowing he might. Agatha shook her head.
But you just said I did what I had to do. So which is it? Which is more important? Keeping Tedros alive, or letting him be a king when he might die for it?
Guinevere smiled sadly. Welcome to being a queen. She touched Agatha's shoulder and walked inside. A short while later, Agatha returned to the sitting room, bathed and dressed in a black gown, with Professor Dovey's bag on her arm. Tedros stood in front of the mirror, adjusting his father's old coronation robes, while Rian changed into his blue and gold suit.
God, this thing smells even worse than the first time I wore it, said Tedros, fussing with the collar, clearly trying not to look at his battered face in the reflection.
It's just for a short while, said Agatha. The king glanced at his princess in the mirror.
You sound like my mother, he said coolly.
He went back to Rian.
You're sure you tried to get the snake's mask off? There's no way to see who he is. The skims are both his armor and part of him somehow, Rian answered. He sent the skims on his body to fight us, but the ones that make up his mask can't be dislodged. His face is melded with them. Hard to tell where the magic begins and the human ends.
Well, as long as both the magic and human are dead, said Tedros.
He stared hard at Rian.
Since you're the one who killed him. As I was ordered, Your Highness, Rian said stiffly, his eyes darting to the future queen. My men will present his body to the people at the ceremony.
Agatha waited for Tedros to say something to her. He didn't even look in her direction.
Why are you lurking?
Sophie said to Agatha, sidling next to her at the back of the room. Agatha frowned at Sophie's shimmering pink princess dress.
I thought you were done with pink.
Sophie eyed Agatha's black one.
Pot, kettle, she said. Oh, come now, Aggie. I know I said I don't wear pink anymore, but surely even a girl like me is allowed to feel like a princess. For one day, at least.
He certainly is a prince, Agatha murmured, watching Rian put cream on a gash near Tedros's eyebrow. Sophie tapped the bag on her friend's shoulder.
Dovey's crystal ball?
Found it untouched where I left it, thank goodness.
Did Dovey really sleep through the entire battle? I think we're lucky she woke up at all this morning, given what she looked like last night, said Sophie soberly. Dovey claimed it's that ball that's been sapping her strength. Whatever you do, keep it away from her.
Where is she?
Getting the crew ready for the celebration.
Dovey insists the Nevers be as presentable as the Evers in deference to the king, which is taking some work, to say the least. Agatha snorted half-heartedly. Sophie rested an arm on her shoulder as they watched the boys.
"Will we exchange gifts in front of the people?" Rian was asking Tedros. "As king and knight, I mean." "We won our battle, didn't we?" said Tedros. "Besides, can't deny a boy who grew up jabbing pillows with spoons and rehearsing for this moment his whole life. With all that preparation, your gift better be a good one." "My gift, I know you'll like," said Rian thoughtfully. "It's your gift I'm concerned about." "Very funny," Tedros said, elbowing him.
"Tedros?" Sophie asked. The king turned. "Are you going to try to pull Excalibur again?" she said. "At the celebration, I mean." Tedros considered this for a long moment.
"The snake is dead. The people of Camelot are happy. The woods are safe once more. Excalibur will have its day," he said. "Just not today."
He smiled warmly at Sophie and Rian, then at Agatha. "See, darling," Sophie whispered to Agatha, "you two are going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay." Agatha didn't answer, because from the way Tedros smiled at her, Agatha was thinking very much the opposite. The door flew open and Merlin shambled in, his slippers muddy, his cape tattered, and his hat slashed and full of holes. He took in the scene and grinned, revealing three teeth missing where there'd been teeth before.
"Ah, just in time," said the wizard. "Presenting King Tedros and his royal court,"
a courtier announced. The crowd unleashed a roar as Tedros and Rian emerged onto the Blue Tower balcony, followed by Agatha, Sophie, Guinevere, and Merlin. Tedros and Rian took their places in front of the archway with Excalibur trapped in its stone, while Agatha and the others stood off to the side behind them. Agatha could see from the crowd's dress and colours that it was composed overwhelmingly of citizens from beyond Camelot, many wearing lion masks, holding lion banners, chanting, "Lion! Lion! Lion!" Tedros raised Rian's fist in his, and they soaked in the ovation together. Agatha made sure to stand next to Merlin, accidentally smacking him with Dovey's bag as she did.
"That crystal ball shouldn't be in your hands, Agatha," said the wizard.
"Well, it shouldn't be in Professor Dovey's hands either, with what it's done to her."
"Then swear to me it will stay in your hands and no one else's, until you return it to her,"
Merlin said, glaring.
"Fine," said Agatha.
"Swear it?"
Merlin demanded.
"I swear. Happy now?"
Agatha said, exasperated.
"Where have you been? You look terrible."
"I've always appreciated your candor, Agatha,"
the wizard replied dryly.
"I wish I could be as candid about my own travels, but the perils I've endured have served little purpose. It appears the king has found a happy ending all on his own."
Agatha watched Tedros and his knight wearing matching smiles and waving to the people.
"Though maybe your ending is the one I should be concerned about.
the wizard said. Agatha saw Merlin's blue eyes peering at her suspiciously. She looked away. Sophie touched her from the other side. "Look at them, Aggie," she said, watching Tedros and Rian hand in hand. "Who knew two boys could be best friends like us?" Agatha mustered a smile. "You're sure you're okay?" Sophie said, studying her. Thankfully, that's when Tedros started his speech.
"Today I stand here as your king, on a proud day for Camelot and a proud day for the woods," he said, amplified by one of Merlin's white stars. "Under siege by a villain who threatened our way of life, we came together to stop him. Camelot and the woods, good and evil, ever and never. Not just with our army built from my kingdom and yours, but also with a loyal group of friends at my side. Friends whose fairy tale the Storian is writing as we speak. And when that tale ends at the close of this celebration, the pen will have told the story of a team of peers who gave up their own quests for glory to set off on a bigger and more dangerous one. A team who not only succeeded in that quest, but achieved a glory bigger than any one of them might have attained on their own. People of Camelot, people of the woods, I present to you Dean Clarissa Dovey of the School for Good and the crew of the Igraine."
Professor Dovey came out onto the balcony to a hearty greeting from the masses, looking rested, refreshed, and more like her old self. At her side were Beatrix, Rena, and Kiko, in three of Guinevere's old gowns, along with Willem and Bogdan, hair combed and smartly dressed in starched shirts that Dovey must have borrowed from Tedros's closet. Together, they took their place behind Agatha, Sophie, Guinevere, and Merlin. Tedros waited for the last three members of the crew to emerge. The archway stayed empty, Excalibur glinting silently from its glass box overhead. Professor Dovey pulled her wand from her pocket and shot a spell through the archway. A collective yelp echoed, followed by Hester, Anadil, and Dot, shuffling onto the balcony in pastel-coloured dresses, their hair curled and primped like poodles. Agatha gaped at them.
"Dovey said it was a condition for us to go back to our old quest and look for a schoolmaster," Hester mumbled.
Tedros cleared his throat, returning to the crowd.
"Whenever my father had a great victory in battle, he invited the people onto the grounds of the castle to share in that victory. Just as he once brought back the body of the Green Knight for all of you to see, today we too have proof that a terrible villain will never harm our woods again."
The crowd stirred with anticipation.
"Behold," Tedros declared, "the snake is dead."
Four guards in full knight's armor and helmets marched through the archway at Rian's direction, carrying the snake's body on a plank. The crowd erupted in its biggest cheer yet, as Tedros and Rian took the plank and raised the snake's blood-spattered corpse over the balcony for all the woods to see. Agatha saw Rian make eye contact with Sophie, giving her a loving wink. Tedros, meanwhile, kept his focus on the crowd, not even glancing Agatha's way. All the while, Agatha could hear the witches behind her.
"Difference between evers and nevers is we don't showboat for applause," Anadil grumbled. because what we care about is getting the work done, said Hester. Can't wait to get back to schoolmaster interviews.
You sure we can't convince Rian to be schoolmaster? Said Dot. Look at how he is with Sophie. They definitely don't want to be apart.
Dot's right. Long-distance relationships never work. Plus, he'd have a lot more power as a schoolmaster than as a knight, said Annadil. Besides, I can't think of a better candidate, Hester. Can you?
He's already proven he can bring good and evil together, Dot appealed to Hester. Dovey loves him, and Sophie listens to him. Around him she's calmer, nicer, and less of a lunatic. What more could you ask for in a schoolmaster? For once, Hester didn't argue with them.
Maybe we're at the end of our quest after all, she said finally. Does this mean I have to go back to teaching history? Said Hort.
Does this mean I have to go back to being a first year? Said Nicola. The group snickered. Dovey the thining my team a new quest to be a peacekeeping fourth near the forepoint, said Kiko. Dovey's sending me and Rena to help rebuild Jaunt Jolie after what the pirates did to it, said Beatrix.
It'll be strange, not being all together anymore, said Hort. Coming on this quest felt like school again, only this time I actually liked you guys.
We'll all be at Agatha and Tedros's wedding, won't we? Said Nicola.
That we will, said Hester.
Silence ensued, and Agatha could feel the group's eyes on her while she pretended not to be listening. Sophie had certainly been listening, though, because she squeezed Agatha's wrist and whispered to her, as long as they're not in any of the wedding portraits. Agatha gave her a look. I'm your wedding planner, said Sophie. Clarissa might have made them all look like wet farm animals, but you can be assured I'll be dressing them myself. In front of the girls, the guards reclaimed the snake's body from the king and knight and held it off to the side as the ceremony continued.
And now for our final tradition that comes at the end of every victory. The exchange of gifts between king and knight,
Tedros announced to the people.
In so many of his battles, my father fought alongside his greatest knight, Sir Lancelot du Lac. Lancelot was killed at the hands of the snake, but his legend will live on.
He looked at his mother.
Not only in the hearts of those who loved him most, but also in the spirit of a new knight. I have a Lancelot of my own in Rian of Foxwood, a knight who will fight with me for the rest of my life. I may be the Lion of Camelot and your king, but Rian is my lion, and thus has earned the name as well. Rian, please address the people you so bravely serve.
Lion! 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 The people bellowed.
Tedros put Merlin's white star under Rian's suit collar so his voice could be heard. I do hope Rian gives Tedros something suitable, Sophie whispered to Agatha. You can always judge a man by his gifts. Rian stepped to the balcony.
It is no easy feat to think of a gift for King Tedros of Camelot. So, as inspiration, I looked to the gift that Sir Lancelot always gave King Arthur at the close of a winning battle. The knight would kneel before a lady of Arthur's court and offer his tribute to her. As I stand before Arthur's son, I too would like to offer my tribute to a lady of his court.
He turned towards Agatha and sank to one knee. Agatha blushed.
"Oh, Aggie," Sophie breathed. "How chivalrous!"